Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Dylan Jones doesn't pull punches in his thoughtful, often hilarious, and sometimes biting new book, a nearly 800-page survey of all things pop that the British GQ editor finds worthwhile, and many he doesn't. I enjoyed the heartfelt rumination on the meaning of Brian Wilson, one of the longer entries in the Biographical Dictionary of Popular Music, From Adele to Ziggy, The Real A to Z of Rock and Pop, a book published by Picador. So I could only laugh when, hoping for a similar treatment of one of my favorites, I turned to the Crosby, Stills, and Nash entry to read the following line, A Varnished Log Cabin. So it goes in this collection, which Jones writes was a project he had long flirted with, but has only now completed, against the advice of his novel-minded editor. Lucky us. Dylan Jones, welcome to the Roundtable.
Nice to speak to you.
So how did you decide what would make the list in this big book?
The whole point of the book is to be completely subjective. I think nowadays, where we live in an environment where information is literally at our fingertips, and all of us have information to pretty much anything, particularly in the cultural world, the only way to have any cut through is to actually have opinion. And also, I think that the other thing is that opinion online these days, I think, is woefully reductive, which becomes apparent when you look at the comment streams after blogs or newspaper or magazine articles online. So I wanted to try and attempt something which was purely subjective, but hopefully in an entertaining way, and also something which hopefully, without trying to sound too pretentious about it, elevated the quality of opinion.
How long had you been thinking about doing this book?
Forever. I mean, since God was a boy. And each time I brought it up, my agent would say, that's a fantastic idea, but it isn't something that you want to do because you can spend your life doing it. But actually, so I sort of spent years doing it almost as a hobby. And then I realized that I finally had enough and I wanted to divest myself of all this stuff.
Certainly there are many entries in the book where you're not a fan of the person's work or their public persona, but you could spend, I'm sure, 2,000 pages on those types of artists. How did you decide the people you would toss off with maybe a mean line or two? How did you decide who to include from that group?
It's difficult because you can't do everybody. If you did, you would end up with a book that was 40, 50, 60 times the size, and it's completely unmanageable. You have to be subjective. You start with passions, music you like, artists you appreciate, and also there are the people who have had an effect on the last two or three generations, where it would have been contrary or perverse to leave out. So some people you have to mention, even if you don't particularly like their music.
Were you freed in this book more than you are in your role as the editor of British GQ to be more honest than you might normally be?
No, not at all, actually. In fact, some of the pieces originally started as columns or features which have been radically altered. But no, I think opinion is the lifeblood of magazine journalism.
You mentioned before that the way we read the news now is all about the reaction, the first comment on a YouTube video. It's often very mean-spirited online. Is there a way to criticize in your mind without having to delve into that level the way we so often do today?
I hope so. I think that one of the problems of the vocabulary of the internet and the Twitter sphere is that it is mean. It's because suddenly everyone in the world has access to a loudspeaker. And in order to make themselves heard, they think they have to be vitriolic, where they're only really being reductive and making themselves look foolish in the process.
How did you first get turned on to rock and pop music?
Probably when I was a kid, listening to the Beatles. But I was really swayed by my parents' taste in music, because they had an old radiogram, and they'd listen to Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr., and music like that. And I really loved that music when I was a kid. And it was weird because in the mid-90s, all that music became fashionable again. And I think it became fashionable because every other sort of music had been brought back and applauded and celebrated. And easy listening, sort of middle-of-the-road music, elevator music, it was seen to be the devil by so many generations you know, anyone who came after the sort of year zero of 1955 would have to pick easy listening music as the antithesis of cool music. But it was music that I always loved.
So following up on that, has pop music, let's say, after the explosive 60s, which have led to the way we perceive rock and pop ever since, I think most people would agree that you have sort of Elvis, Beatles, Rolling Stones, and everything after. Has pop music gotten worse in your mind?
I don't think it's gotten worse. It's gotten smaller. And I think there are two schools of thought, one which says there is a canon, and one which says that music continues onwards in better and greater ways. I think there is a canon, and I think there was a finite period of extraordinary music. There is still extraordinary music being made today, but there's a lot less of it. I think you only have to consider the number of major global acts that have broken in the last 5 years to consider that's true, that pop music in the grand scheme of things is a lot smaller than it was 5, 10, 15, 20, 50 years ago.
I was taken in the Brian Wilson piece. There's a moment where you're listening in a radio in California, sort of the way the Beach Boys were meant to be heard. And that made me wonder, without that sort of mass media now defining public tastes, how we should think about pop music, whether there's still the availability for a sort of national or international music moment the way it's so fractured now.
I think it's both macro and micro. And I think that it's, you know, you look at how quickly virals on the internet can become sensations. You know, the Korean Gangnam Style thing, which in a matter of days became hugely popular. So I think that the transference of information these days and the rapidity of it all makes it easier for there to be these big breakout moments. But it also makes it easier for things to just disappear. You know, I mean, I've got kids now, and I know they sort of click into hugely popular things, zeitgeisty things, but I would rather hope that they're listening to in a furtive fashion to weird, odd music in those dark recesses of the internet. I hope they are.
Do you think that's where rock and pop are going, into a weird place?
Not essentially. I think that pop music generally is driven by two things. It's driven by mavericks and it's driven by genuine talent. And I think that there will always be great songwriters, there will always be great producers, there will always be people who have innate talent and who are great craftsmen. But you always hope that there are people who are groundbreaking and mavericks to such an extent that they change the culture.
If you had to do an entry for yourself in this book, what would it be?
That's a very good question, he said conceitedly. I don't know. That's impossible to answer. But I'd love someone else to have a crack at it. That's very funny.
Well, we're talking to Dylan Jones. His book is The Biographical Dictionary of Popular Music from Adele to Ziggy, The Real A to Z of Rock and Pop. He's also the editor of British GQ, and it's been a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Take good care.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.